Welcome to the Drop Time Report. Turn up the volume and listen to amazing stories about big bucks and the hunters who harvested them. Here is your host, outdoor writer, Tracy Breen.
Welcome to the Drop Time Report. I'm your host, Tracy Breen. Today is going to be a pretty interesting podcast. We're switching gears a little bit. We often interview hunters who've killed monster bucks. Today we're going to have on Randy Malcor from Trophies of Grace, and we're going to talk about the James Jordan buck. To give you a little background on Trophies of Grace, they have an amazing display of over 40 of the largest bucks ever killed, whitetail bucks ever killed by hunters, trains, cars, whatever, in America. And they're all shoulder mounts. They're all replicas, and they take them around to wild game dinners. They take them to deer expos and show them off. And it's an amazing display. I've been able to see it firsthand. I've spoke at several wild game dinners that Trophies of Grace was in attendance at. And that's what gave me the idea to talk about the James Jordan buck. What a lot of people don't know is the James Jordan buck was the, still is, the largest typical whitetail ever harvested by a hunter. It's number two in the world, Boone and Crockett, second only to the Milo Hansen buck, which was actually taken in Canada. And this buck not only is amazing in the sheer size of it, it's also amazing because the story behind it is one of a kind. And to think about the fact that this buck was killed in 1914, so over 100 years, it's been standing tall. It was the world record, and now it's number two, and it's been number two for a long, long time. And the twisted tail behind this deer after it was killed, it actually disappeared for many years. The hunter who killed it didn't know where it was, and then it appears again. And only after James Jordan dies is the true story behind this buck told. So today, Randy is going to tell us that twisted tail behind the James Jordan buck. But before we get Randy on the phone, I'd like to thank my sponsors, Redneck Blinds, Fourth Arrow Camera Arms, Wind Scent, makers of Vapor Scent Technology, Morel Targets, makers of the High Roller Target, Huntworth Gear. If you're looking for clothing that doesn't break the bank, check out huntworthgear.com. Pine Ridge Archery, makers of the Nitro Vane, Lucky Buck Mineral, Grim Reaper Broadheads, Schaefer Performance Archery, makers of the XV Arrow Rest, Illinois Connection Outfitters, Outdoorsmans, makers of great backpacks and tripod systems for glassing, and Wilderness Athlete. If you need to shed a few pounds, a lot of us do this time of year, check out wildernessathlete.com. They make a wide array of nutritional products. My favorite is Hydrate and Recover. Enter Drop 10 at checkout and get a discount. Now let's go ahead and get Randy on the phone. Welcome to the show, Randy. How are you today?
Good. Just got in. Got my computer up and all set to go.
Got your cheat sheets out, huh?
Well, I just got my slideshow presentation that can help me walk through it.
It does make it easier, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, it does. It does. You don't have to think, hey, did I forget something? Or
yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about the Jordan buck today, but before we get started on that, I just wanted to share with the audience a little bit about Trophies of Grace. And I remember the first time I walked into a church and saw all those antlers. You know, it was there in Wisconsin. And one of the things I asked you that you later figured out was, in the display of Trophies of Grace, how many inches of antler is there?
There is, oh boy, you caught me on it.
It was over. I remember, you know, you told me, and then when I was up on stage, I remember announcing it. I think it was over 10,000, wasn't it?
I think.
Wasn't it over 10,000?
It could be. I had a slide of that at one point, and I haven't used it for a while, so.
Yeah, I know it's a lot of inches, and it's, how many bucks do you guys have mounted?
45.
Okay, and they're all, you know, trophies that either died on the road or died from a hunter that are well over 200 inches, right?
Correct, yeah. Most of them getting close to the 300.
Okay, yeah. And how long how long ago did Jim start this, where he had all the replicas made and all that kind of thing?
He ordered them in 2010, so it took us about 2 years to get all of them.
Okay. Okay. And you've been traveling around to churches and doing presentations since when?
2011, we did the first one.
Okay. And so to give everybody a little background, they take this traveling show with them. You know, they set up all these mounts, either in a sanctuary or gymnasium, and then they pick out a few of the bucks with the most notoriety and tell the story behind them. And it is amazing to walk into a room for the first time and see that many big bucks on one wall. They're all shoulder mounts. They're all replicas of trophies, and it is a sight to behold. And how many wild game dinners are you guys doing this year?
We did 30 in 2019, and right now we've probably got close to 20 of them booked.
Okay. Okay. So they're a very popular show, that's for sure.
Yes.
So today we're going to talk about the Jordan buck. And this is a presentation I've seen you give this one a few times, and it is one of my favorites and probably the favorite of many people out there. There's a lot of twisted trails in this story. But as far as you know, it is the largest typical buck ever taken, correct?
This would be the second. So the Hanson buck is currently the number one, and the Jordan buck is the number two.
Number two, okay. Yep. Okay. And, I mean, it's been number two for forever. I mean, how long ago was this buck killed?
This buck was killed in 1914.
Okay. Okay. So now we'll just hand you the mic, so to speak, and kind of let you go with it here. So tell the story behind the Jordan buck.
Okay. So the Jordan buck, for a little background, was taken in Danbury, Wisconsin on November 20th, 1914. And it's a mainframe 10-pointer, so 5x5, Boone and Crockett typical score of 206th and an eighth. And again, the story begins back in 2014, and what I like to do is kind of set the stage for it a little bit. And it's the take yourself back to the day before opening season in Wisconsin. So that'd be a Friday night. You're up in the cabin up north most of the time, hoping for good weather in the morning. And here we have a scene where it starts to snow right before bedtime. Looking forward to a great day of fresh snow on the ground. You can be able to see the deer real well, and it's going to be a good, crisp, cool morning. So James, right away in the morning, he wakes up to the smell of coffee and bacon, which we all love, and sits down with a couple of his friends. His friend Enos was going to hunt with him, so after breakfast, they head out. And they go out, like most of us, grab the Ford or Chevy truck. Well, really not. They grab the horses and a wagon and headed down the road towards the Yellow River. They get down to the area they wanted to hunt, and they stop, tie up the horses, and head off in the woods in two different directions. Well, it wasn't long after they split up that James hears a shot, and he's trying to decide, do I keep heading back to where I'm going to hunt, or should I go back and see what Enos has down on the ground, if anything. So he does that. He decides to go back. He gets by Enos, and here he's got a nice doe laying on the ground. You know, he's looking to fill his meat in his freezer for the winter, so he's got something that he's very proud of and ready to take care of. So after a few high fives, James and Enos decide, well, we better get this field dressed and get it back to the wagon. So Enos gets down to get ready to field dress his deer and reaches for his knife, and he forgot it. So what he does, he asks James, and James, sure enough, he's got his knife, so he hands it to Enos. They get the deer field dressed and hauled to the wagon. Well, once they get to the wagon, Enos says, well, come on, James, let's go back to the house, and you can help me hang this up. And he says, no, I'm not coming back. He says, on the way over here, I ran across some deer tracks, and he says, one of the tracks looked like an elk track. So Enos took off for the house, and James went back to do a little still hunting and see where those tracks led. The tracks led down, heading towards the Yellow River, and up towards the railroad tracks that goes through the area. And as he got up on the railroad tracks, off in the distance, he can hear the sound of the train starting to come down the tracks. As he's standing there listening and kind of looking over the area, the whistle blows on the train. Kind of startled him a little bit, but it also startled some deer that were bedded down right off the edge of the railroad tracks. So up jumps a bunch of does and one big buck. Well, that buck jumps up and James pulls his rifle up on it, unloads on it, and is hoping for the best with his shots.
Now, we've all been there, right?
We've all been there. And one unique thing with James's rifle is he's shooting a 25-20 Winchester. Now, if you look at the side of the box on a 25-25 or a 25-20, it's a picture of a gopher instead of a buck. So, I mean, this isn't a very big shell, but it's all James had, so that's the way he went with it. James took a walk over toward where the deer was when he shot, and to a lot of luck and happiness, he found some blood, a little bit of a blood trail running there. So he decided to follow that blood trail real slow, again, still hunting it, and see if he couldn't catch up with that deer. So he follows it. He walks a little bit, again, still hunting, walks a little bit, and then stands still. Standing still more than walking. Moves a little further and a little further. Pretty soon he sees something move up ahead. Well, as he moves a little further, he keeps jumping this deer. And this deer is moving down towards the river again. So James starts following, thinks, okay, he's probably going to go into the river, cross the river, and a lot of times the deer will stop and look back at you as it comes out of the river. And that was his hope. Well, he gets closer, and all of a sudden he remembers, man, I unloaded my gun on this deer. I better load another shell. So he starts looking in his pockets. He can't find another shell. Till about the last spot he looks, and finally there's one shell left in his pocket. So he loads that into his rifle and continues following this deer down towards the river. Well, James sees the deer in the river while he's a little bit away from the river and kind of scurries down the rest of the hill, the bank down there, gets a good rest on one of the trees. And as that buck steps out, just as he had hoped, it stopped, looked back at its pursuer, and James took one more shot it in the neck, and dropped the buck right there on the edge of the bank. So that could be the end of the story, but there's a little more to it than that. James does get across the river, finally picks up the antlers of that deer, and just amazed at the size, decides, okay, it's my turn to field dress this and go ahead down, and he reaches for his knife, and guess what?
No knife.
Yep, he left it with Enos. Enos took it back with him. And so now James is sitting there with, well, a way to field dress his deer. So he decides, you know what? I'm just going to go back. I'll get Enos. We'll bring the horse and wagon down close as we can. And then we'll take care of the deer. So that's what he does. Walks back to the house. By the time he gets there, they do, you know, a little bit of celebrating there. And they hook up the horses again, and they head down towards the river. Once they get there, James is showing Enos where the tracks led, follows down to the river, and he gets to the bank of the river where the deer is just on the other side, and looks across, and the deer's gone. Well, go ahead.
The nightmare unfolds, right? I mean, can you imagine killing a buck like that? And then that truly is every hunter's worst nightmare.
Yes. Yep. So he's looking for boot prints, or see if somebody else came in and took it. He didn't see anything there. He didn't see any prints of where, guess what? You know, I lifted this deer's head up, but I'm sure it was dead. But did it really just get up and walk away and didn't see anything? But what would happen if you lay a warm body of a deer on the side of the riverbank on the snow, and as that body heat gets into the snow, it slips down into the river? So that was the way that James was thinking, and him and Enos started walking downriver, and in the first bend on the river, here's their buck laying on the stones on the side of the bank. So luckily they found this deer, and celebrate it again. And then again, that could be the end of the story. But it's not. So what happens next is James takes his buck home, gets it hung up in the barn. And I guess like every hunter even today that I know, and my truck is an automatic autopilot. If I see antlers sticking above the box of the truck, my truck automatically goes that direction. I got to stop and see what this deer is. Well, he had lots of people from all around hearing that, hey, he shot this big buck. They wanted to come and take a look at it at the farm. So they see that, and one of the guys is a taxidermist. So he offers to mount James's buck for $3. And James says, "Ah, you know what? I can let him take it for that." So the taxidermist takes the rack and the cape and jumps in his vehicle and heads home to Webster, Wisconsin, which is about 25 miles south of Danbury.
Okay.
So the next spring comes around, and James says, "You know what? I want to go take a look and see if that guy's got my cape and antlers all put together, my mount ready." And he makes the trip to Webster. When he gets to Webster, he's got a problem. The taxidermist moved to Hinckley, Minnesota. Now, that's a little bit further away for James, and the St. Croix River, he has to cross to get there, and there's no bridge in the area that Danbury's in. So it took James 2 years before he made it to Hinckley, Minnesota to check on his buck. When he gets to Hinckley, Minnesota, unfortunately, he finds out that the taxidermist had moved to Florida.
Wow, that's a long trek.
So that's a long trek, and a trek that James never was able to make. But James returned to Hinckley, Minnesota, because he found another little deer, D-E-A-R, instead of D-E-E-R, and went back and married a gal from Hinckley, Minnesota, opened a little establishment there in Hinckley, and that's where he spent the rest of his days, never realizing that when he moved to Hinckley, the mount of his deer was in the attic of the house that the taxidermist had rented while he was in Hinckley. So another sad ending to this story of living in the same town where your buck is, your trophy buck, up in an attic somewhere, and you not knowing it's even that close to you.
Yeah, that's the part of it that's so crazy to me is, you know, it was right under his nose that whole time.
Yep, and never knew it. Well, a few years later, now this is a few years by, I'm talking about 44 years after that was harvested, that buck, a forester named Bob was looking at a rummage sale, and in the back of the garage laid this whitetail mount. And he purchased this just for a few dollars, figured, hey, I can clean this up. The sawdust has fallen out of it, you know, the old way of taxidermy work. And in pretty rough shape, but he thought, you know, this is kind of interesting. I'm going to buy this rack and take it home. So that's what he did. He took that home, and probably about 6 years later, is basically 50 years after the harvest of that buck, Bob is reading a sports magazine, and Boone and Crockett had an article in there just kind of talking about their club and talking about how to score a deer, and Bob decides to self-score that buck and comes up with 205 inches, which put it in, the top buck. He got pretty excited about that, decided to get a hold of a Boone and Crockett scorer that lived a few towns away named Bernie, and discussed getting together and measuring up that buck. And they got a little busy. Never did connect as far as setting a time to come and make a score. But luckily, about a year later, Bernie was coming through town after finishing up a bird hunt, and seen a mailbox that had Bob's name on it. And just thought, you know, I wonder if that's the Bob who called me about the big buck. And he pulled in, knocked on the door, and sure enough, he had the right guy and was able to score that buck for him. And Bernie came up with a score of 206 6/8 inches. So now the bragging goes on with Bob. He's got this big record book buck that he'd like to someday maybe check into putting it in the books. But he's like telling everybody about the score of this deer. He runs into at a little family meeting a distant cousin of his that he had never met. They start talking like most of us do, that the story ends up coming around to talking about deer if you're an avid hunter. And Bob asks his distant cousin if he would like to take a look at this deer he's got. So, of course, his distant cousin thought that'd be great. So he says, yeah, let's go check it out. And by the way, his distant cousin's name was James Jordan.
Crazy.
So crazy. Yeah. How that came around after over 50 years. So they get to the house and James takes a look and right away he knows that's my buck. He gets it in his hands, similar to he did 50 years ago when he picked it up on the riverbank. And you just don't forget a buck like that. And so James has his buck back in his hands again, and that, again, could be the end of the story. But it's not. Well, James talks with his cousin and finds out that, you know, his cousin really likes this deer. James would like it back, but James has no proof of ownership of that deer. His buddy Enos is nowhere around anymore, and, again, 50 years in between is a long time. And James just realizes he just needs to leave this deer with his cousin Bob. So Bob keeps the rack for a while. About 4 years later, Dr. Charles Arnold, who is an antler collector, purchases the mount for $1,500 from Bob. Bob makes a pretty good profit on that deer. The doctor, he decides, hey, I'm going to have this panel scored. So he renames the buck the Sandstone Buck because that buck came from that area and from what he knew. And he has it rescored by a Pope and Young Pope, Boone and Crockett panel.
Yeah.
At 206 1/8 inches, which makes it the potential new world record. And that was in 1971.
Yeah, that's now, what I was going to ask you. So it was a potential world record or a world record until the Milo Hansen buck, correct?
Correct. Yep. Potential okay. Until the time they had it actually scored and put in the record books. In 1971, part of the reason I say potential is because we didn't know how the deer died. You know, was it just found dead? Was it shot? What happened with it? If it was shot, who shot the deer? And then was the deer shot in Minnesota or was the deer shot in Wisconsin? So that were some of the questions that needed to be answered before they could actually put it in the record books. It took a little while longer. It was in 1978 then that Boone and Crockett finally declared the buck the world record. They declared James Jordan as the hunter, Wisconsin the state of harvest, and renamed the buck the Jordan buck, 64 years after harvest. Now, that current antlers are owned by Bass Pro Shops, and they undisclosed the price of it, but it's estimated that the antlers went to them for around $250,000 in 2001.
Wow, that guy made some money, huh?
That guy made some money. So that could be the end of the story, but there's one last note before we finish the story up. James Jordan, at the age of 86, passed away in October 1978, just 2 months before Boone and Crockett declared this buck as the world record. So a great story with lots of roads that it went down. Ends a little bit on a sad note that it couldn't have been declared the world record while James was still alive. But in any aspect, it's just a great, great, beautiful buck.
Now, so it was declared the world record. How many years later was the Milo Hansen buck killed?
I think it was in 1987, and I'm guessing at that.
Sure, yeah. But so during that time, it stood for quite some time.
Yes, it did.
Now, is it still the number two?
It's still the number two, yep.
What's amazing to me about that, I mean, think about that for a second. You're talking 1914 until now. I mean, that's just mind-blowing to me. And you look at hunting today, the technology behind hunting, all the people trying to grow big deer, and all that we know about managing trophy class deer now, and here a deer that was killed well over 100 years ago is still number two.
Yep. We've had changes in the non-typicals a lot more than we have the typicals.
Yeah, for sure. When I look at it, you know, it does look like an amazing buck, but it doesn't look 206, you know, and sometimes you look at it, but it is so perfect, you know, and I think that's what, you know, put it there, obviously. Yep. It's just, there isn't many deductions.
No, not many deductions and a lot of mass. I mean, it doesn't appear like the Breen buck is so wide and just gorgeous in that way. But the Jordan, he has just got the mass all the way out.
Now, you guys have all those bucks mounted. In closing, which is your favorite? Stories aside, what buck do you look at and go, man, that's my favorite?
Boy, you know, that's hard because it changes all the time. It's really tough. I guess if I had to pick one, boy, oh boy, probably, I love the Johnny King, but let me see here. And I got one I wanted to, sorry for the delay here.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. Take your time. There's a lot of them on that wall. If you've ever been to a Trophies of Grace event, you look at them, and it's hard to pick out your favorite. You know, I like the hole in the horn buck and a couple of them, you know, but yeah, it's hard to decide.
So I guess mine, looking at my list here quick, the Kyle Simmons buck is probably my favorite. I love typical bucks, and he's a non-typical, but in a very, very clean looking way. Whereas some of the really non-typicals that are funky in different ways, the Kyle Simmons is symmetric side to side and just got points in nice areas. So
okay,
that's probably one of my favorites.
Okay. What do you, besides the Jordan, which one do you think's one of the stranger stories? Was it the hole in the horn buck that was hit by a train?
Yes. Hole in the horn was hit by a train. I love telling the Neil Morin story. That's a great buck story. It's a lot of fun. Helgi Edmondson, I mean, that's a buck that looks very similar to the hole in the horn, but is a cold, cold hunting 30 below weather is kind of crazy. You know, again, the John Breen buck, a guy that's never hunted in his life. He goes out, gets put on a piece of property, and shoots this huge, huge buck. So just there, a lot of them have great stories behind them. Some of them that we have don't have much for stories that are shed, but we share whatever information we can with them. But
no, it's mainly been one guy in closing who's done most of the replicas, right?
Yes. Yep. And that's Antlers by Klaus has been our guy who's made the replicas, and then we work with taxidermists to have them mounted.
Yeah. And so there's 45, is that what you said, mounted?
Yeah, we've got 45. Matter of fact, we just ordered the new world record buck.
The non-typical? Yeah, Luke.
The non-typical.
Yep.
Brewster buck, yep.
Yeah.
So we've got that. Matter of fact, we're picking our first replica up next week, and it's mounted on a full body mount.
Awesome.
Yeah, and we also, the Jordan buck now, we've got it in the shoulder mount, and we have the full body mount of that. So our new world record trailer has got all the number ones and number twos. So we've got about 7 or 8 shoulder mounts and 2 full body mounts on that trailer.
Wow, that's something. I'm actually supposed to have Luke here on the podcast probably in the next week or two.
You'll enjoy that. He's a great guy.
Yeah, and that's one crazy, crazy looking buck for sure.
It sure is. Just amazing.
Well, cool. I appreciate you coming on. I know the next 3 months is wild game dinner season, and it's going to be a crazy time for you and your whole team. So I'm glad I caught you before it goes nuts.
Well, thank you. And sure appreciate getting to know you, Tracy. And anytime we can help, just give us a call.
All right. Well, take care.
Okay. Thank you much.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The James Jordan buck truly is an amazing deer, and the story behind it is even more amazing. To learn more about Trophies of Grace, visit trophiesofgrace.org to book a wild game dinner with them or check out what they have going on. To learn more about me, visit tracybreen.com. That's TracyBreen.com. When you visit my website, you'll see I also speak at a lot of wild game dinners. It's also where I often do a lot of giveaways for this show. So while you're there, just shoot me an email if you like the podcast or if you want a free pack of broadheads. The first couple people to shoot me an email, I'll give a free pack of Grim Reaper broadheads. Until the next episode, I'd appreciate a positive review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever it is you listen to podcasts, and go ahead and subscribe as well. Until next time, God bless and have a great day.